Hi, this is Dan Hardy, and you're listening to the Mirror TKO podcast.
Live from the O2 Arena in London, England.
Man, relentless once again. Overwhelming. Michael Bisping. That left is finding a home, and again and again and again.
Oh, you heard him. He is so explosive.
Yoshihiro Akiyama.
Scrapper, he's a brawler.
Good left hook.
He is down.
That's it.
What a fight. Wow. Dan Hardy.
Oh, he's
unbelievable. Pounding away. Carlos Condit has done it.
Hathaway is such a powerful dude.
Look at this.
Oh, Hathaway trying to finish this fight.
John Hathaway.
Back and forth they battle. And he finishes the fight. Mike.
The Ultimate Fighting Championship presents UFC 120, Bisping versus Akiyama, Saturday, October 16th.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Mirror TKO podcast. This is part three of three of our special trilogy.
Oh, it's the last one.
It is. It's a shame, but we're finishing with a goodie. We had Michael Bisping to start. Great start. Great interview. Giving Chael Sonnen both barrels.
Looking forward to him giving him sexy armor both.
And he's going to be giving sexy armor plenty when they get in the cage. Yeah. He's up for it, and he's going to go for it. We spoke to John Hathaway, one of the nicest guys I've met in sport. Really nice guy.
He is also massive, by the way.
He's a big guy. He's a big guy. And but yeah, we had a good chat with him, which you probably heard in the last show. And rounding off the series is Dan the Outlaw Hardy. He's ripped through the welterweight division. He had his title shot against GSP. That didn't go so well for him. Now he's bouncing back.
I think that was good for him.
Well, we'll find out what he thinks about that, because he may agree with you there.
I think he does.
We had a chat with Dan. We covered all sorts of different topics.
We did.
Ranging from his fight with Carlos Condit to his record collection to his trainers. We caught up with Dan, and here's what Dan had to say.
Do you not like get asked the same questions over and over? You must get tired of that, surely.
Yeah, I mean, I get a few questions get repeated a few times, but, you know, it's really part of the job, to be honest, and you know, part of my job is promoting the sport and educating the public, and I feel, you know, if these questions need answering four or five times, then I'm more than happy to do it.
We'll pick on talking about the fight. Break down your fight with Carlos Condit. Obviously, Condit is... he's an aggressive, come-forward sort of fighter. How do you assess that fight? Are you going to have to... it's going to be quite different from GSP, who pretty much looks to take you down instantly. Condit will probably look to stand, at least to start off with. And then maybe look to take you down later, possibly. So, I mean, how do you prepare for someone like Condit?
Well, that's a pretty good assessment. That's really what I'm expecting him to do. You know, he's an aggressive fighter. He comes to win the fight, you know what I mean? And not by decision. He likes to finish, knockout or submission or whatever. And really, I mean, that's my kind of fighter, a guy that comes and takes risks and puts it on the line. And I do see him trying to strike with me a little bit, but at the same time, I think that, you know, he's going to quickly realise he's out of his depth there, and he's going to switch his game plan to try and get me to the floor. Obviously, you know, from the GSP fight, he thinks that that's going to be the weakest area of my game and the part to exploit, and training at the same camp as well. I'm sure he's got some coaching tips on that. So really, I am expecting him to, you know, to... he's going to be quite enthusiastic in the stand-up. He's quite aggressive. I'm going to catch him with a few solid shots, and if he's still awake, then he's going to try and take me down to the ground, and then he's, you know, obviously he's going to work his submissions and his ground and pound. But since the GSP fight, obviously there were a lot of lessons learned in that, and there are a lot of surprises for him when we get there, if we get there.
Cool. Obviously the plan is to
the plan's to bully
stay upright and
yeah, that's what I want to do, and you know, if it does go to the ground, I want him going there on his own, unconscious.
Yeah, that's always the best way.
Yeah, we don't get paid for overtime either.
No.
Well, you know what I was about to say,
yeah?
We don't get paid for overtime.
Regiment.
Yeah. So in terms of, obviously, you mentioned the GSP fight. Mm-hmm. Almost exclusively, you were on your back that fight.
Yep.
You know, it was a difficult fight for you to sort of find any kind of openings. And I mean, the one big positive to come out of that fight, I guess, was your endurance against submission attempts. Some of the submission attempts that were on, I don't know how you didn't tap. I've watched quite a lot of UFC fights, and I've seen fighters tap for much, much less than, you know, some of the arm bars you have, which is nuts. So the pain threshold is obviously pretty high. So if you find yourself caught in a submission, are you reasonably confident that you can A, deal with that, and B, reverse and power out? And
I am, yeah. I mean, submission defence is something that I've been working on, focusing on. I obviously also want to work on my offence on the ground as well, because that was something that let me down in the GSP fight, along with my wrestling, my takedown defence. So I have been working on those areas, but to be honest, when it comes to submissions, the thing that I struggle to do is to admit I've been beaten.
Right.
And to admit I've been beaten would be to tap out. And you know, if I get caught in an arm lock or something, and you know, he's cranking it on, my head is not thinking I better tap because it's going to break. I'm thinking, hang on a minute, how do I get out of this so I can get back on top and hit him in the face?
Yeah.
So the pain, thank goodness for adrenaline, the pain's not really an issue. The motivation to win is the thing that stops me tapping, really, and you know, I'm just really enthusiastic to get back to a position where I can hit him. And the GSP fight, it was a tough fight, but it was, you know, I mean, like I said, it was a great learning experience, and it really highlighted areas of my game that needed work. And it's something that I have really you know, strived to do since the fight.
And there's been quite a gap between the GSP fight and this fight. Is there going to be any sort of pent up frustration, or you've sort of dealt with the disappointment of defeat, and now you're going in completely fresh, or are you just going to take all this anger out on Condit's chin when you walk in there?
I try to look at things objectively, and you know, the GSP fight was, you know, it was good for me at the time. It was the right thing for my career. You know, I needed that fight, and I needed that experience in order to kind of take the next step along, you know, with my skill set. I am annoyed about it. You know, I wish that things would have gone differently, obviously, and you know, it wasn't an easy camp by any means. There were a lot of things away from the sport that were difficult as well. So you know, going back, I would have done a lot of things differently, but I can't change the past, and I can't let that affect my future. And I think that you know, this fight is really feels like my first step on the way back to the title. You know, I'm not thinking I've got to dig myself out of a hole, because I don't really feel like I'm in a hole after the last fight. I feel like, you know, I took a couple of steps back, and now I'm ready to start moving forward again. And Condit's the first step.
You mentioned the problems outside. Is that something that you want to talk about, or would you rather not talk about?
Well, a lot of the camp. I mean, this is not something that. I mean, it's by no means an excuse for the fight. I mean, the fight would have gone exactly the same if this wasn't the case. But I was spending a lot of time. I mean, I was going from the gym to the hospital and back to the gym, because my granddad was ill, and I actually lost him February 16. So it's kind of that's life and death, unfortunately. You know, so that was right in the middle of camp, and that happened 6 weeks before the fight. So then, obviously, the next 6 weeks, you know, I'm kind of carrying that with me, and yeah. You know, and along with the TV cameras being around me 24 hours a day, and you know, all the pressure of you know, going over to the US for 3 weeks before, and the dieting and everything, you know, there was just a lot going on, and that was an addition to that. But I mean, like I said, it had no bearing on the fight anyway. I would have just liked to have been able to kind of have a more straightforward camp, I think.
Sure. And obviously we've got Condit coming up, new camp, new training, addressing issues that you had in the last fight.
Yep.
Confident in a win, I would assume.
Very.
You're going to deal with Condit at yep. UFC 120. What is your path after that? Because obviously you had the title fight, you're now in sort of the raft of contenders again. How many fights do you envisage that you need in order to get back up to fighting GSP again, assuming he's still at welterweight?
For me, I think three fights, including the Condit fight. I think I'm going to beat Condit convincingly, very convincingly. And I think people are going to start to look at me after this fight and think, you know, maybe I'm going to be a solid contender in a couple of fights time, and then my next two performances will just assure the UFC and the fans that I'm the next contender for the belt. And I think over these next three fights, I can work on the things that I've been learning since the GSP fight, and have them sharpened and ready to go when the fight comes around.
And obviously, leading up to this, you're in intensive training camp. What do you do to relax away from training? So you've left your training camp, you go home. What do you do?
I have an extensive DVD collection, and I have an extensive record and CD collection. The thing keeping me sane at the moment is records, vinyl.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean it's something that I've collected records in the past, and it's something that I've kind of gotten back to a little bit. There's a little shop in Nottingham called Rob's Records, which my mum used to go in and when I was a baby and take me in the pushchair, and and she used to shop there all the time, and I've started going back in there, and he has some of the most fantastic records. So I spend most of my day Saturday flicking through records and donating half my bank account to him. But that is the thing that's keeping me sane during this camp, is just being able to go home and sit in front of my turntable and, you know, put Bob Dylan on, or The Doors, or The Beatles, or Hendrix, or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm. I mean, I even bought some Al Green the other day. What a fantastic album that is. You know what I mean?
That's some serious music.
Oh yeah. But you know, and that is for me, that is the easiest way to step away from what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, I can stick a record on and there's nothing about it that makes me think about the sport.
Yeah.
And I only need an hour, and I'll switch it off and I'm ready to go back to the gym again.
Yeah.
Because I am very focused on what I'm doing, and it is the most important thing to me right now. But obviously every now and then it's nice to take a step back so you can have a fresh look at it.
Yeah. And what music do you use to sort of get psyched up for a fight? You're into your punk rock.
I've actually just taken off my UK subs t-shirt because it's got profanity on the back. I completely forgot when I put it on this morning. I've got a quite a varied taste in music. I'm sponsored by Eric Records, and they supply me with a lot of the music I listen to.
Yeah.
A lot of crazy bands that you probably never heard of, like Decapitated and Worm Rot, and a lot of like thrash metal and you know, things like that. And at the same time, I listen to, you know, some of the heavier American punk, like The Casualties. And then I've got loads and loads of like American hardcore, like Madball and Sick of It All, and bands like that. And then British punk as well. You know, anything from Crass and Conflict, the Sex Pistols, to Clash. I mean, I've actually got my Clash shoes on today.
Nice. Oh yeah, I heard you talk about that earlier.
Yeah.
You're happy about these, aren't you?
I am. First time I've worn them today, and I'm just enjoying every minute with them on.
If you wasn't so hard, I think I'd step on your foot.
The trail on those toes is going to be a bit of a shock.
You'll knock me out.
So, I mean, what are you going to walk out to?
I'll walk out to the same song I always do.
You're going to have the same.
Yeah, England Belongs to Me by Cock Sparrow.
Yeah.
Particularly because it's got my vocals on it as well, so that's always an added encouragement.
So that's your signature one?
Yeah, I think if I changed it right now, I think people would be a little disappointed. I have a lot of people coming up to me saying that they love the tune.
Yeah.
You know, even the UFC owners listen to it in the gym when they're training and stuff, so yeah, it's a good song.
Talk us through the Mohawk. How long have you had it? How difficult is it to look after? You mentioned about it wasn't behaving when you first turned up.
No.
And what situation would crop up where you decide, right, it's going?
Okay, well, I've had it for quite a while. I've had it since... I've had it probably in the last 5 years. But then I've had it earlier on in my life as well, you know, when I was a kid. And you know, through my teenage years, I had it for a while. And it is difficult to manage sometimes. Right now, it's the length where the only thing that will hold it up is glue, like PVA glue, like real glue, which is also difficult to wash out. But I've shaved it off a couple of times in the past, and I do feel a little less complete with it without it. But having said that, if I ever wanted to go somewhere in disguise, that would be a reason to shave it off. I actually went to a UFC in Vegas once. And I had regular seats, and I thought, I'm going to go regular seats and enjoy it as a fan. I shaved my head, and I didn't wear any of my sponsorship stuff, and hardly anybody recognised me. Yeah.
But beanie hat would do the same job, wouldn't it?
Well, to be honest, I mean, this was a long time ago when I cut it off to go in disguise, so I don't know if it'd have the same effect now. See, what I used to do was I just used to put a hat on, and I've got like quite a selection of NFL hats, you know, Cowboys and Buccaneers and Raiders and everything. And I just put one of them on, and usually I can walk through a place without being recognised. But even recently, that's people are starting now to recognise my face a bit more as well. So
yeah, I was about to say. I mean, over here in the UK, have you over the last 12 to 18 months, have you noticed your profile increasing when you're out and about?
Definitely. And I always got people coming up to me. I mean, I'm a big fan of Nottingham Panthers.
Yeah.
And I go to their games pretty much every week. And every time I'm there, there's always someone that spots me and comes over and... You know, and I mean, I think it's still kind of strange for my family and my friends because they still see me as Dan, just Dan Hardy from Nottingham, and you know, and when people are coming up to me wanting a photograph, I think people see it kind of strange because I am this other entity away from reality. You know what I mean? It is very strange, but I am getting it more and more now, and it is becoming more a part of my life, particularly after the GSP fight.
How strange is it for your family and friends? Obviously, you're this still this young man from Nottingham. Obviously, I wouldn't big you up too much, but obviously you've got this massive career in the States. You're not, you know, you're known kind of around the world now. Mm-hmm. Is that still? I can't believe my son's doing it. Or I can't believe that's my mate.
Oh yeah, yeah, it is very strange.
I used to frame over all the time.
it is very strange. Yeah, I mean, people from school as well that I haven't spoken to in years that I used to be friends with at school contacted me like, oh, I can't believe what you're doing, or. You know, I get a text, I've just seen you on the Argos advert, or I've just seen you on the front of Fighters Only magazine or whatever, and yeah, everybody finds it very strange. I mean, I still do. I think the only person that's kind of getting used to it now is my girlfriend, and that's probably because she's the one that stands by why people are asking for photographs and stuff.
How does she deal with you getting in the cage? And is she, I'd asked John actually the same question. Is she a reluctant watcher? Will she sit there looking between the gaps in her fingers, or is she right there going, "Hit him"? Is she
no, she's very supportive and quite. She's very very confident in what I can do, and
yeah.
You know, so she'll watch the fight and she'll see it as it is. It's a sport, you know what I mean? And and my dad's the same. He gets a little bit more anxious though. He gets nervous, and my mum completely shields her eyes. She can't watch it.
Yeah.
It's a little boy getting punched in the face. But yeah. To my girlfriend, it's what I do every day, and she's used to it.
Yeah. How much time? I have this theory in the competitive sport you're in that if I was ever in it. Especially the last couple of weeks, definitely the last couple of days, I could not see anyone that I loved, and because I thought I'd have to get into back to the basics, animalistic, because I'm going to get in the ring, you know, in the cage with somebody. What about yourself? Are you quite calm all the way up into it, or
I have my moments, and my fuse is a lot shorter when I'm in training camp. This camp's actually the first time my girlfriend's been over here. Normally she's over in the US, and I'm here on my own. And then I only see my parents at weekends, and I'm all right because I'm, you know, I'm like I'll see them for a few hours and I'm okay, and I'm back on my own again. Whereas this time it's the first time she's been around me, and I mean, to be honest, she's made life a lot easier because she cooks and does all my laundry and all that kind of stuff for me. But at the same time, that like on a morning when I've got sparring, like a Tuesday or Thursday morning, I wake up and I'm tired and I know I've got some rounds to go with some guys that are going to be punching me in the face, and I'm on edge, and then it's just a littlest thing, like, why is this here or whatever, and then I catch myself and I'm like, no, hang on a minute, you know, it's not, you know, and then I apologise to her, but she's getting used to it now.
So would you stay away for the last couple of days, or are you still okay?
Well, the week of the fight I won't see her. The week from the Tuesday to the Saturday I won't see her, and the next time I see her I'll see her Monday night, and then I'll see her Saturday night after the fight. And that really is that's the week that I'm the worst. Okay. The only person that gets it then is my coach.
Yeah.
And he expects it.
Yeah, of course, yeah. This
week that's his job, yeah.
What I wanted to ask you about, obviously you're in mixed martial arts, it's a growing sport, and you're quite high profile online. You know, you're quite happy to engage in debate and actually answer people's questions online.
Yep.
How do you deal with people who are less educated about the sport of mixed martial arts, who say it's barbaric, who don't understand the intricacies of the sport?
It's difficult. I mean, you know, some people are ignorant to the point where they refuse to learn about something.
Yeah.
And they're the people that you kind of just have to feel sorry for and ignore. A lot of people who have got, you know, an open-minded approach to it, they can be educated and they can be taught about the sport and about the athletes within the sport. And I mean, I spend all day talking to people like that. I don't mind, because if they're willing to learn, then I'm cool. It's every now and then you'll get the guy that doesn't want to know. It's barbaric. You're a thug, and you know, and it's you can't talk those people around. I had a debate a while ago on a website for one of the newspapers, and I went back and forth with this guy, and I gave him logic, I gave him reason, I gave him facts, and he came back with the same thing. Yeah, but it's human cockfighting. Yeah, but it's barbaric. And he really didn't have a point. He got an opinion, and nothing to support that opinion. And I could have argued with him till today and he would have still had the same opinion. So some people are just set in the ways and will never change. But the most people can now see what we're doing and why we're doing it, and you know, and I always say, you know, if anybody ever wants to come and watch me train and you can see what effort I put in, you know what I mean, you're welcome to come and watch, and I'll quite happily educate you about the sport. I'll talk you through what I'm doing and what, you know, what the team's doing, and that's it. I mean, as long as you've got an open-minded approach, you understand what we're doing, and you're either going to be a fan or you're going to accept that it's something that we love to do and not judge us for it.
Yeah. And just to finish off, obviously the card is stacked with British fighters. Talk about the other fights in the card. Tell us how you think they're going to go. So we'll start with Mike against Yoshihiro Akiyama in the main event. How do you see that one going?
I think that's a great fight, and I think it's a very, very tough, evenly matched fight. I mean, obviously Mike's got all my support. He deserves the win. You know, he's going to be back in London. He's going to be fighting hard, and I really think that it's going to be difficult for Akiyama to come into the O2 Arena and take it from Mike. I think he's too motivated, and he's going to put too much effort into it. Having said that, he is a fantastic opponent, and he's a superstar as well. I mean, his entrance alone is enough to.
Is it Andrea Bocelli?
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know what I mean? I was at his last fight against Chris Lieben, and just the whole arena just went silent, and everyone got goosebumps and they're like
jaws hitting the floor.
Yeah, because it's a total change of pace. I mean, Chris Lieben came out to a Red Hot Chili Peppers song, you know, and it was. Everywhere was electric, you know, the whole place was bouncing, and then all of a sudden everything slowed down, the lights went blue, and Akiyama's coming out crying, holding his corner man's hands, and it's just a very, very strange experience in that environment.
Yeah.
The fight's just going to be great though. Both guys want to fight, both guys bring it, and I'm just excited. Mike's got my support, and it's a difficult fight to call, but I'm calling Mike.
And John Hathaway against Mike Pyle. It's a different opponent for him. He was due to be fighting Japanese judo.
Don Yun Kim.
So that, he's had a change. So slightly different opponent, different risk for him because he's a submission specialist, Mike Pyle. So, but John's been awesome in the UFC. So.
Yeah, I think he is one of the best talents we've got in this country right now, no doubt. I certainly think that, you know, when, you know, in a few years time, when, you know, when Mike's about ready to finish and I'm about ready to, you know, to call it a day or whatever, or I'm past the peak, I think John will be about ready to step into our shoes and kind of solidify himself as the number one in the country. He's got all the talent in the world. I've trained with him a few times, and I was very, very impressed with him. I think Mike Pyle's a very, very tough opponent. I've trained with Mike, and he is legitimately very, very good. But I think that John's got all the ingredients to do it. I think that John wants it, and I think that he performs better under pressure as well. I think that's going to be the key. I think it's going to be the actual ability to perform in that kind of environment that's going to win the fight, and I think John's going to do it.
Cool. Now, you both fight at the same weight. Yep. You see this home flying over the horizon. Can you ever envisage a situation where you two might end up meeting inside the octagon?
Would you
take that fight if offered it?
Well, if that's the way it goes, you know, I wouldn't be able to turn it down. You know, sometimes it happens like that. I mean, obviously, you know, John's a friend, and I, you know, I wouldn't like to fight him, and right now it wouldn't make sense for us to fight anyway. If it came to the stage where, you know, we were both contenders and that's the fight the UFC wanted, then so be it. But right now I think we're at different stages of our career for a start right now, and I think that to get us at the same level, a lot would have to happen between now and then. So I think there's a lot of time between that fight potential. But, you know, who knows? I mean, mixed martial arts is one of the strangest sports in the world, so anything can happen.
The Ultimate Fighting Championship returns to London Saturday, October 16th, as three British warriors take on the world's best. First, Brighton welterweight John Hitman Hathaway looks to continue his unbeaten run. And top five welterweight Dan the Outlaw Hardy returns to action. Plus, Michael the Count Bisping collides with Japanese judo master Yoshihiro Akiyama in the explosive main event. The UFC, October 16th. Tickets on sale now at the O2 Arena box office and Ticketmaster.co.uk.